You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen, with the dark shadow of the Empire rising to take their place. This message is a warning and a reminder for any surviving Jedi. Trust in the Force.
Care to let me in on the secret?
Kid, I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
Welcome everyone to Trek FM's local watering hole. Hosts from the network, friends drop by, we talk all things geeky. I hope you have grabbed a great drink from Ruby and a fantastic chair. Just gather around. And I'm really excited. I'm your host, obviously, Matthew Rushing, and I've got some people with me that I can't wait to introduce to you. John Mills, it is fantastic to have you back here on the 602 Club.
It is fantastic to be here. Now that I have, outlasted my ban order from the last time I started a ruckus, I'm glad to be back in.
Yeah, it is nice. I'm surprised that Ruby said it was okay, but she said as long as you don't break any chairs over any more Andorians, she's going to be cool with it.
I will do my best.
Yeah, and watch out for that, you know, that weird hammerhead looking guy.
Oh, yeah, no, we give each other
space.
Stay
away from him.
We're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
Okay. And for the first time on the 602 Club, we have with us Tristan Riddell of To The Journey fame.
To The Journey!
To The Journey!
Journey! Yeah, that's right. Welcome, Tristan.
Oh, it's so good to be here. I got my ginger ale neat, I'm quite excited, so I'm here to... I'm here to talk with you guys, and we were just saying on the other side of the room, it's been so long since we've podcasted together, and I'm just I'm so happy to be here, and not just to talk about Star Trek, but to talk about other things. I mean, that's just
yeah. Well, the last time, Tristan, that we talked on the other side of the room, we said the last time probably Into Darkness when we did that Ready Room. It was like me, you, and Char. It's like 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it was right when it came out of the theater. Yeah, it was like you, me, Char, Lori, and I think maybe one or two other people. Like, it was a mess. Like, I had to moderate because there were so many people.
Yeah, that was a crazy show, and one of those movies too where everybody's opinion was everywhere, because it is so much fun, because I love this show and getting to have people to talk things that don't necessarily talk Star Trek. I mean, we love talking Star Trek, but there's sometimes only so much Star Trek talk that you can have. And so we're going to focus on another Star franchise. And you guys might remember back in October of 2012 that Disney was deciding what to do. They bought Lucasfilm. That meant the cancellation of the Clone Wars, which I lamented. And it was really sad when that show ended. And that was because they were partnering with Warner Brothers with the show. And obviously, Warner Brothers and Disney have a competition going with their, well, obviously, their superhero movies now and everything. It's definitely a competition. And it left a lot of unanswered questions for fans. We learned soon after that Disney was going to create a brand new animated show. It was going to be helmed by the Clone Wars supervising director, Dave Filoni, and Simon Kinberg. And tonight, we decided it would be great to get together to talk about the first season, the full season of Star Wars Rebels. But I wanted to go back real quick with you guys before we jump into the season. After Clone Wars was canceled and they said they were going to give us a new season kind of about the rebellion's beginning, what were your initial feelings just about that?
Well, I like a lot of people were, you know, like a little confused of because Clone Wars was going so strong, and at the same time I was like, okay, so is this in the same universe as Clone Wars? I mean, you know, like, I know it's all one Star Wars universe, but at the same time, I was like, okay, is this part of the new continuity? Is this part of the old continuity? You know, like, is this, like, following the movies? Is Rebels going to recognize Clone Wars' existence? You know, so, like, all of these questions were in the air when this announcement happened, but I was kind of going in and out of Clone Wars. Like, I wasn't anywhere near as dedicated as you. And actually, every time Clone Wars is on or I watch Clone Wars on Netflix or anything like that, I think of you, Matt. And because my brain has made that connection with you and the show. And actually, I was traveling and I was in Atlanta. I was in Naples, Florida, not too long ago. And I texted you saying that yes. Man of Steel was on the was on HBO. And and you texted me right when it was on. I was like, oh, this is so weird because I automatically think of you when I see Man of Steel. But anyway, Clone Wars, like, I didn't have as much of a close connection with Clone Wars as you did, Matt, and I don't know about you, John, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, but I wasn't as invested. But with Rebels, once this started, I was just like, okay, this is just another Clone Wars. But once I got used to it, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I have investment in this. Like, I'm getting excited for this. And so I actually just, I didn't finish Clone Wars until... 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
nice.
Wow. I sort of envy you. I remember when everything was finished. That was, because they went out on a high note. They really went out on a high note. Even if you didn't bring in the, you know, the sixth season stuff that they put on Netflix, the way that the fifth season ended was a wow point from my point of view. I was very invested in Clone Wars, so.
Can you remind me how season 5 ended?
Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Oh, is the Ahsoka story? Yeah. Okay, the Ahsoka storyline. That's right.
Which was that? I mean, I was heavily invested in Clone Wars. That was one of the rare shows that I made a point to watch live. Like, that was a never DVR show. That was my special time. That was, you know, lock myself away in a room. Nobody bother me. I've got a beer and I've got Clone Wars and I got my action figures and the world can't bother me right now. And
So was it like Spaceballs where they'd walk in and you were playing with your action figures? You're like, yes. I told you to knock!
Yes, yes.
It I was didn't exactly. see you playing with your doll, sir.
Good. You know, when I found out about Disney buying it, you know, I was just fixated on, oh my gosh, there's going to be an episode 7 because that, you know, that announcement was part and parcel was, you know, it was going to keep going. It was like, oh, wow. When they inevitably then, you know, followed up with Clone Wars is going to end. That was tough. I understood the business case for it. You know, like you guys have said, like, Disney is not Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers, you know, isn't going to keep the license. So that made sense to me. But at the same time, I don't know. I was sorry to see it go because I felt it really was in its stride. It was really strong. But, you know, go out on top. Rebels, I've had a harder time plugging into. I'm going back to Clone Wars, and I remember that was a jarring adjustment, but I think that it benefited from its debut movie was a more cohesive entry point than the entry point for Rebels. And I think that's why, and I don't think I'm alone. I think that people like me have had trouble latching on to Rebels because it didn't have that big cohesive entry point that Clone Wars did.
Yeah, the movie, I remember seeing that in the theater and thinking about how weird it was to see animated Star Wars on the big screen. But I think the main thing for me was just like the music was so epic and so different from John Williams' score that kind of helped tie it together. Like, it was something familiar but new at the same time.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you. Like, I did really like the movie. I don't think I was as blown away as the most of the world, but I did think it was a very solid story, and it introduced you to all these characters and the new versions of the characters, kind of the new interpretations. Because they were different from the movies, and Ahsoka, of course, and yeah, with Rebels, when you had Spark of Rebellion, I thought it was solid. I thought it was good, and I think it was a great introduction for those characters. But at the same time, it was just it couldn't hold a candle to the Clone Wars movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that additionally, just as a final point, the Clone Wars movie was an introduction point for one character, really. It was to bring Ahsoka in. We knew everybody else that was a main character coming in. And so I think that also worked against Rebels, was they were introducing a whole bunch of new characters, heroes and villains, as opposed to this is all set up so that we can add one more major character to the ones you already know.
Mm-hmm. I remember when the announcement came about the whole thing, and for me, the hardest thing for me to deal with is the fact that they were to cancel Clone Wars. I mean, it crushed me because I love that show. I still love that show. In fact, my wife and I are, after we record this, we're actually going to finish season 4 because it's her first time through, and we've been watching it chronologically, and which the seasons kind of jumped around a little bit. And so if you kind of put it all together like Leland Chi did, he's the master of the holocron over there at Star Wars. He keeps track of all of the timelines and make sure everything runs together correctly. It flows so well. In fact, I think it plays out even better than it did when you watch it. Just kind of the way they had it in air date, because all the storylines are really flowing together. So I was really crushed when it was canceled, because like you said, John, they had hit the stride animation-wise, storytelling-wise. Everything was firing on all cylinders, and so I was definitely looking forward to hopefully a couple more seasons with that high quality. And every season had got, you know, exponentially better than the one before it with the quality of the animation they were doing, I felt like, on the whole with the storytelling. And the risks that they were taking, too. I mean, geez, bring back Darth Maul. I mean, they do all sorts of things that you would never think would work, but they work. And then when I heard it was going to be this new show, I was like, but I just want more Clone Wars. I don't care about a new show. So I came in it with a bias. And I'll readily admit that I was dispositioned to not like Rebels from the beginning because of what had happened, you know, the way I felt like I'd been treated as a fan, as if I deserved to get anything, you know. Yeah. But it was one of those things, like I felt frustrated. And so, you know, getting into this new show, I was feeling cold towards it just because of everything that happened. And that kind of hurt, I think, some of my first impressions of the show, even just when we talked about it, John, on our very first episode of the 602 Club, Man Tears. We were, you know, the frustration of trying to get into a new show, like you said, that I don't know any of these characters, and they haven't, at that point, you know, the first episode, it doesn't necessarily give you any reason to care for them. You have to really watch the rest of the season to slowly begin to grow an affection, I think, for the characters. And we'll get to where I end up at the end, because it might be different. You don't know. That's why you're listening to the show. So
I think I was excited for Rebels, because when I heard when Clone Wars came out, like when it was coming out, when it was in production, you know, like, you know, I was just like you guys. I was following it from the beginning when it was just a rumor, when like work was happening, when Lucas was saying he was excited and that he could go on forever and that they already have like dozens of episodes in the can and we haven't even seen anything yet. You know, I was really excited about that. And then when I heard about the concept of what it was going to be like, I was even more excited. But the thing is that the concept that that Filoni said was going to happen was what the Rebels concept is and was. And when Lucas got more involved, it changed drastically to what it is now, the Clone Wars. And so I felt a little cheated, because I wanted that structure. I wanted the Star Wars Rebels structure. I wanted to focus on a crew. I wanted to focus on one crew and then go through their adventures together. And then when I saw that Clone Wars was much more of an anthology and, you know, bounce around the universe and bounce around with different crews and different characters and everything like that, I was like, okay, you know, it's fun. This is a fun distraction. And then it took a while to, like you guys talked about, to take those risks and to develop the story and the animation and everything like that. And so when Clone Wars was canceled, I was sad, but I understood why it happened. But then when Rebels started, I was like, oh, cool. now I get the show that I was promised 7 years ago. And I think that's why I was probably more excited than you guys, because the concept I was hoping to have 7 years ago was finally coming to fruition.
Interesting.
And I think that's a great place to start, Tristan, and John and I talked about the first episode before, but what were your first impressions, getting into the show and seeing Sparks of Rebellion, and then the first few episodes, the droids in distress and fight or flight, those things. What were your first impressions kind of once you finally got to see this new hopeful promised land of Star Wars?
Well, with Spark of Rebellion, like I said before, I mean, like, I was intrigued. I thought it was good. It wasn't as good as the Clone Wars movie. But I was intrigued. I was like, okay, you know, like, it's not as solid, but, you know, like, I'm going to give it a chance. I don't want to be one of those people who are like, oh, the pilot sucked, I'm not going to watch it ever again, you know. And it didn't suck, but I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. But then Droids in Distress happened, and I was like, oh... Okay. Yeah. I was like, I don't know about this, folks, but I started watching this, I didn't catch up to this until 2015. Like, I didn't start watching until January. Like, I did not watch this in October, November, December. And so, like, it got to me at the right time, because I was knee deep in editing a film, and I needed, like, I was editing. I had like 18-hour days, 20-hour days. It was insane. And so there was times when I needed to scale back. And so I was like, okay, I need something that I just need to wash over me. And so I got the episodes, and they were just like, it was just like Clone Wars. It was just like candy at first. But then I caught myself, like, I was working while I was watching at the same time. But then all of a sudden, like, I could kind of dismiss Droids in Distress and Fight or Flight and everything like that. And I was just kind of watching the background. But all of a sudden, I started catching myself, like, stopping working and just focusing on watching. And so it just got better and better and better. And I think I was hooked by episode 4, Breaking Ranks. That's when I was like, okay, I like this show. This is good.
That's interesting. I want to ask, actually, Tristan, do you feel that this is accomplishing what they said they wanted to accomplish, which is being more accessible to, maybe people who prefer the original trilogy to the prequels? Like, do you feel that this is more evocative of that 1970, not just design aesthetic, but the feeling of the characters? Does this feel more like those original set of characters?
You know what? Like, people, all the articles that you read about the show, they keep saying about that was the intention, to bring the aesthetic and the feeling of A New Hope to a new show. And I never really felt that way. I felt like it's kind of on its own. I did like the feeling of a ship on its own, you know, like, and they're smuggling things and they're trying to fight the Empire. So it definitely, I think it was definitely a great deal more like the original trilogy compared to Clone Wars. But I can't really say, like, if I just watched this in a vacuum and mm-hmm. Clone Wars didn't exist, I couldn't really say, oh my gosh, yeah, that is A New Hope.
Okay.
You know, yeah, that's my opinion. I mean, like, I think, like I said, I mean, it's much closer to the original trilogy in Clone Wars, but I think on its own, I'd have to say maybe.
Okay.
What do you think? Like, yeah. What do you guys think about that? About how does it harken back to a dawn of Star Wars in the 70s?
A New Dawn.
A New Dawn.
The title of opening book for the new canon, and the first book about Star Wars Rebels, too. So,
Which was a decent book, actually.
Yeah, it was. I mean, reading. Of the new canon, it's the only one that I've enjoyed. So,
I enjoyed Tarkin. It wasn't as enjoyable. But in terms of the show, it's very tough, because the design aesthetic very much feels like all of the stuff that I've read in the behind-the-scenes books and the Macquarie paintings mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So it's evocative in that sense, where it's like, oh, neat. Like, it's just like the little the design Easter eggs that they had all throughout Clone Wars, or even Attack of the Clones, where you could see earlier versions of stuff that you know were left from the original sketchbooks and those sorts of things. I have gotten the sense, I think that as the series progressed, it got better about it, but definitely in the beginning, it felt too much like they were trying to force the connection to the original trilogy, and so it actually wound up repelling me in a way. Because by reusing music cues that belonged very definitively to other character moments in the original movies, that I'll instantly unplug because, no, that's the music that happens when. That doesn't belong here. Like having little motifs repeated inside of a theme, okay, I'll give you that. But reusing them wholesale is... The only one I give them a pass on is the Imperial March, because it's the Imperial March, parentheses, Darth Vader's theme. So it's like, okay, it can work for both. But yeah, I feel that they're finding a way to connect, but no, I don't think that they've been particularly successful in evoking that same... I do remember what it felt like, that original trilogy, in the moment back when I was a kid, and... It's not quite there. They're finding their way, though.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, John.
And it's funny because for me, watching the Clone Wars, I remember seeing the movie that just theatrically and thinking, man, this is some of the best Star Wars I've seen in a long, long time, because I felt like there just had this Star Wars-y feeling. It was fun. And enjoyable and somewhat lighthearted, lots of jokes, some seriousness. They didn't hold back on any of the seriousness in Clone Wars. I mean, clones get mowed down all the time. I mean, sad things happen, and it obviously gets darker and darker and darker. But it still felt Star Wars to me. You know, I I'm not really a fan that divorces the prequels from the original trilogy and that they don't feel the same. Like, to me, it's all the same universe. So as long as you feel Star Warsy, you know, that's all that matters. And I think for me, like the first few episodes, Droids in Distress, Fight or Flight, those two episodes, I felt like they were trying so hard to add the humor and the lightheartedness in that they were missing something. But for me, by the time they got to episode 3 with Rise of the Old Masters, kind of like the prequel trilogy where you get to the Revenge of the Sith, you can't deny that it's not good. Like, and I felt like Rise of the Old Masters, they started to embrace a lot of stuff in this show that carried forward through the end of the season. Like, that really started to make the show stand out. Like, they were grabbing hold of where they were in the Star Wars universe and starting to really talk about and just tell you things you kind of wanted to know about this time period. You know, what happened to the old Jedi, like Luminara? You know, did anybody else survive? You know, what is this Inquisitor like? We finally really get to see him in that episode. Him and Kanan go at it big time, you know, for the first time. And, you know, all that stuff, it just starts to come to a head in that episode. And I felt like that's what really won me over, because when they used the droids, R2 and C-3PO, and Droids in Distress for the second episode, I was like, oh, we're already going here.
Right.
We're already, like, doing this thing, and we'll get to Lando later. But, it was very frustrating for me. And then Fight or Flight was just kind of like, eh, you know. So, little did I know that would actually play a part in the final episode and be actually kind of important. There's a lot of things that they do here, and so first impressions were just, I was kind of on the fence still. Like, just, I don't know. I don't know what to think of this show. And then, of course, I the thing I hate the most, when I see online, if one more person says, oh, Rebels is just like Firefly.
I haven't heard that.
No.
Yeah, people.
Star Wars is the original. Firefly is like Star Wars. So, if anything is...
Well,
Rebels is like anything. It's like Star Wars, not Firefly.
Well, the one thing that I'll give people a pass on for that is Star Wars hasn't really had a show before that focuses on one crew trapped on one ship, the way that Rebels does.
Yeah,
so I get what they're saying, but I get what you're saying too. But I think both of you have sort of hit on something too, where we've all been talking about like how it sort of ramps up and it sort of gets there. I almost wonder if as fans, any franchise fans, we've gotten impatient to the point where we don't want to give a show that first season to find itself.
Yeah.
You know, and another show that I'm taking flack for liking from other friends of mine is Gotham. And it's because I like enough about it to give it that first season and say, you know what, they're going to screw up every once in a while, but let's see how they figure their way out of those messes. And I think that with Rebels, the biggest thing is by the end of the season, they seem to have figured out their way out of the mess that they created. And I know that that seems like a really mess that they've created is a really sort of like harsh term, but it really seems like they've organically figured out a path to go down, a path of the Jedi, if you will, by the end of the season.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. I'm really glad that you said that, because that's really important about that giving a show a chance and letting it build through its first season. And my friend and also co-host on the Nerd Party, Matt Hansen, and I, we were talking about this very thing, about how back in the day, you know, like in the 80s and 90s and everything like that, and even before that, a show like, and like, look at Star Trek, you know, look at the Next Generation.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Season one and season two are incredibly weak compared to the rest of the seasons. And I was telling him, I said, I was like, if Next Generation aired today in the mm-hmm. same format, the same way, with the same stories, there would not be a season two. There would not be a season two of the Next Generation, because he blames it on people's attention spans, which I agree with, but I think it's more so that there is so much more. I mean, like, you look at what you grew up with in the 80s and the early 90s, and you had maybe 10 channels, you know, if you were lucky, and then maybe 4 shows that were any good. And then today, you have to be phenomenal right out of the gate to break through the noise. To cut mm-hmm. through the noise, because there's so much stuff out there. There's so much great stuff. There's so much bad stuff that if you aren't generating buzz right off the bat, or if you don't knock it out of the park in the first couple of episodes, people go, click, I got Netflix that I can binge watch 15 other great shows. And why would I waste my time with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge frustration. And I love that you hit that, John. I think it's so true, because, you know, if I had allowed my frustration and cynicism at the beginning, and I completely admit that I was just frustrated with Star Wars at that point because of losing the Clone Wars, and that really did carry over, and it soured me, and I had to just keep watching, and it won me over. And one of the things that I thought was fantastic about the way the show did it is, I like to consider this the J.K. Rowling theory of doing things, where you drop these seemingly innocuous bits throughout the season, and so that at the end they become paramount of importance. And they just picked all the things they had used throughout the season to create the finale of this year, which was fantastic. Like, almost every episode had something that played into what happened in the finale, which I thought was really great, that, you know, they are learning how to tell, I think, a good story, and really, I think, kind of creating a masterclass on how to do continuity without ruining the show's enjoyment, so that I can pop in and watch any episode, but I can also binge watch 3 or 4 episodes at a time and be rewarded for that type of viewing as well. And that is probably one of the hardest things to do these days in a television show, and I think we see it in a lot of ways. This all came together for me as I binge watched the entire Rebels season in one day, and just saw how it played together that way. And beforehand, I had just watched it, you know, every week that it was on. And so doing it those two different ways, I was able to see how all the stuff connects.
Interesting.
And enjoy it two different ways, and really, I think, see it play out well. So I think if we're saying anything, guys, give shows a chance to find themselves, you know. And like you, John, I'm on the fence with Gotham right now. It's okay, and I'm going to continue to watch it. I'm going to let it, you know, do its thing. But there are some shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is about to lose me. I'm just like, it'll sit on my DVR. I'll get to it. You know, I just don't feel like it right now.
You know,
so
I think that's a good point. actually, you know, about the DVR is Rebels is good enough that I'm not watching it live, but I will go to it. It doesn't rack up a bunch of episodes before I go back and catch up. So maybe that's the sign of the test. I have not binge watched it where I've gone from episode one to the end. But I think I will now. I'll give that a shot just because of that continuity. I mean, the sense that, do you guys also have the sense though that as they were finding their way, they were sort of retconning continuity into it? Like they would come up with later episodes and say, okay, how, like something like the X-Files or even Clone Wars, you had an arc that was going to stretch through everything and mm-hmm. go, you know, you knew where you were going from the get-go. You had a map, and they are more forging their way through this uncharted territory, but then sort of drawing connecting lines backward so that you can do that binge watch and sort of, you know, just create a mythology in retrospect.
Can you give us an example or?
You know, I would actually say the Inquisitor, a lot of his interactions, he seemed, because they drummed him up a great deal in, you know, all of the press leading up to the show, all of the talk about the show. And it almost feels like as the season progressed, he didn't really have his identity, his true identity until the end. But then they did it in such a way that the earlier appearances made sense for that character. Like they didn't know necessarily where he was going to end up, but the way that they put that together made his earlier appearances, made his, for an Inquisitor, he seemed almost sort of a passive sort of character to me. He didn't seem as forceful as I would have expected. I expected him to be, especially from what they were saying about him leading up to the show, more Vader-like. Mm. And the way that the season ends, you suddenly understand why he isn't Vader-like, why they never took that step with him.
That's a great question. My speculation is that this is a 13-episode season, and they had, I think, enough time to be able to craft a lot of the season before they started quote unquote filming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that putting these things together, and the way the story group works with Disney now and having to have things kind of more planned out of where you're going to go makes me think that this is more deliberate than the Clone Wars was. In a lot of ways.
Well,
but I don't know. That's a great question. I think that's something we'll probably get on an extra on the Blu-ray. It'll be really fantastic where they kind of talk about crafting the season.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things sort of informing my take is Filoni did that three-part interview on StarWars.com where he was talking about putting the show together, and he revealed there were a lot of things, including when they discovered the temple and the way the story was going to play out in Path of the Jedi. Like, he apparently made major changes, drastic changes, to the goal of the episode, like, right as they were getting ready to film it.
That sounds like Dave.
Yeah. So he said it didn't feel Star Wars-y enough, and so he went back and they retooled a couple of things.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that happening, too, specifically with Dave, because he sat at the Master's feet and learned how to make Star Wars for 10 years. So if anybody knows what Star Wars-y, it's Dave Filoni these days. I mean, because Lucas was heavily involved, more than a lot of people, I think, recognize with the Clone Wars. Some of the biggest ideas for that show come directly from George. Hey, I want to bring Darth Maul back. But George, you cut him in half. Well, I want to bring him back. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, literally.
Just by the way, spot on, yeah. Lucas, right,
yeah,
there.
That was pretty fantastic.
And but I mean, just it very much the same. Like you know, Dave asking him about the beginning with the cloaking ship. You know, that Anakin and Obi-Wan use against Admiral Trench. Dave's like, but no ship that small has a cloaking device. And George was like, well, this one does. You know, that's just George. You know, he'll do what he wants to do because he enjoys telling enjoyable stories. That's what he does. Continuity, it is not his biggest concern. His biggest concern is telling a great story, and he'll try to make sure that the rest of it works as it goes. So, I can see that this season, I think they figured out what really worked in the show, and they finally went with it. There are a couple episodes where I feel like, I'd say that there are probably three episodes in this season I could have done without, and on a whole, the rest of them were really good.
Okay. You know, you're obviously referring to, because you mentioned it earlier, the Lando episode. I'm dying to know what your problem is with the Lando episode.
We'll talk about the Lando episode. This is actually going to be a whole thing in the podcast, the Lando episode.
Okay.
My problem with the Lando episode, much like Droids in Distress, was that they were trying to drive in like an OT reference, like an original trilogy reference. The whole episode is, we want Lando in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not, does Lando actually work for the story? Does he need to be in the story? Should he be around Rebels at this point in the first place? Because when we see him in Empire, he could care less about the Rebellion. You know, he doesn't like the Empire, but he's also making a buck. He doesn't care. So having him here doesn't make a lot of sense, especially since I know they're going to bring him back for season two. And so having all these connections with the Rebels, I feel like, softens that character in a way that's kind of ruining his appearance when you finally get to Empire, where his turn is much more dramatic. You know, if we're kind of like making him just the friendly smuggler, hey, how you doing, you know, Hera? You know, it bothers me that we're gonna kind of take that kind of... It didn't need to be Lando for the story. Like, I always try to think of story first, and there's absolutely no reason for it to be Lando in the story. I just rewatched it today. Lando doesn't add anything to the story.
I guess I understand where you're coming from, and I think you make a very solid point, and it's a very solid storytelling point, that does this need to be Lando? And the answer is no. It did need to be Lando, but I freaking love that it was Lando. just because, like the voice that you were mocking right there, I was like, that's all I was thinking about. It's just like, well, hello, Hera, welcome to the cool side. You know, it's just like stuff like that where I'm just like, it made me geek out enough where I did, like, I cannot argue with you, Matt. I mean, you were absolutely right. Did it need to be Lando? No. But I geeked out hard enough where I was just like, okay, this is cool, you know. And I felt like they walked that line where he wasn't a complete ally to them. He was trying to make a buck. I mean, was he trying to thumb his nose to the Empire? Not really. In that episode, it was really just about making a buck. Yeah. And so it wasn't helping them out; it was helping himself out. And so I feel like, you know, like, if just judging by this episode alone, I mean, like, I'm sure they're going to use him again, but just judging by this episode alone, I don't think it softens anything in Empire Strikes Back, because that turn is still effective, because in this continuity, in this story, he still double crosses them, he still cheats them, and he's still a lovable and charming at the same time. And I feel like that's Lando.
Well, also, let's not forget, in Empire, he becomes sort of a prisoner of his own maturity, especially if you add this episode into the continuity. In this one, he's very devil may care, roguish, you know, kind of guy, totally
That's
out for
the
himself.
The takeoff I've had in years.
Yeah, but in Empire, he's bound. He makes his decision because he does care about the people living in Cloud City, and he wants to protect them. So in a sense, they leverage his own character growth against him. So
yeah, that's true. And I think just what I'm worried about is, and I say this, and we'll get to the very end where I'll tell exactly what I felt about the entire season, but I do trust Dave. He's given me the Clone Wars. I have no reason not to trust him. He's done a great job. So I don't think they're going to destroy his character, Lando's character. I think There's no way Dave would allow that to happen. It's just a fear of mine that that would happen. And it was a little bit of a frustration just because, you know, when you're doing this kind of show, you do have to be careful about not overusing familiar elements, because you do want these characters to find their way. And that's true. One of the big reasons that Dave said that when we get to the very end of the season, there's a huge reveal of a character that comes in that they don't really, they're not even planning on using that character very much. They'll use them, but it's not going to be something like they're bunking up on the Ghost now. Because they still need these characters to be the ones that are kind of at the forefront, even though they've stepped into a much larger world by the end of the season. So I think that's really wise, because the hardest part about the show of finding these new characters became the strength of the show by the end of the season, when we were seeing just really how important these characters were. Because on the other side, bringing Frank Oz back as Yoda completely works for me. In the way they do it, where they're referencing the Yoda arc from the Clone Wars with the little lights that, you know, leading Ezra around the Jedi Temple there on Lothal. And if you haven't seen that part of the Clone Wars, you don't know that that's a reference to what's happened to Yoda and how far he's come in the last 15 years. Like, Yoda can now... He can merge himself with the Force enough to create the same little lights that Qui-Gon could. Like, blowing my mind, kind of amazing stuff, you know? So that's where the connections really work so well. And when they nailed it like that, it was just frustrating to me that Lando's appearance didn't have more of a play to be important, because literally you can take that episode out and story-wise, for the rest of the season, you wouldn't miss it. And that was another kind of frustration for me, because it's right there. It's like Path of the Jedi, Idiot's Array, and Vision of Hope. And like, there's so much going on. You get to Idiot's Array, and it's just a throwaway episode. Like, you don't need it for the finale or the story. But
doesn't that speak to, I think you were making the point earlier, or no, I'm sorry, Tristan, you were making the point earlier that it... some of these episodes are the type where you can just have them on in the background and it just can sort of wash over you. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, even though they're creating this mythology that does plug in all together, you know, you can sit down and you can be like, you know what, I want to have it on in the background. I'll just put on Idiot's Array and, you know, I can just have it as noise, you know, which isn't the greatest compliment for an episode, but at the same time,
I threw it on in the background just so I could hear Billy Dee talking to me.
I would totally do that. We have to remember too that, you know, this, like, these animators, these storytellers are smart enough to make a show that is enjoyable for all audiences, but we have to remember who the target demographic is type of show. And that is people who are much younger than us. And they're like, sometimes you need those throwaway episodes. Sometimes you need those episodes that are just pure fun. And I mean, because it's going to take time. Like, if they follow the kind of format like Clone Wars, they will take the time to build the audience and actually let their own audience get older and then expose them to darker stories. And like you referenced Harry Potter earlier. I mean, think about the first book and then think about the last book. Oh my gosh! Right. It's almost like it's two completely different tones, but it completely matches the style and the verve of the story. And with Clone Wars, it was just so funny because when you started out, it's fun, it's popcorn, you know, it's Star Wars, you know, it's the fun Star Wars, it's the cool Star Wars. It's not Empire, you know, like it's a new hope, you know, and that kind of feeling. And I remember like when I was finishing up like season 5 and season 6 of Clone Wars, like my wife would be doing something and walking in. She's like, well, you know, what's going on with these guys? I was like, oh yeah, no, he has a brain tumor and they tried cutting it out and now he's dead. And and then she come in later. It's like, oh, what's happening here? Oh, they're just beheading him to make an example in front of the other people. They're like, oh, what's happening now? Oh, like they just killed his mom in front of him. You know, it's cool. She's like, and this is a kid show? you know, this is a kid's show. And I was like, yeah, kinda.
Yeah, you're completely right. They definitely went that way. And what's so interesting is I think you're right, Tristan, and it really works when you kind of give that Harry Potter reference to this, is that I feel like this season is definitely like, you know, the Sorcerer's Stone, the Philosopher's Stone. I feel like the next one's going to be very much more like the Chamber of Secrets kind of thing.
No, let's just skip to
Azkaban. I mean, Vader's there now.
Just skip to Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah. Skip to Azkaban, please.
You know, I mean, we've got a whole other, you know, level of villain. That was one of the things I noticed is, you know, they kind of boss up throughout this season. You know, they go through the kind of low-level bosses, then they go to the mid-level bosses, then they get, you know, the Inquisitor, and then they get Tarkin, and now we've got Vader. You know, it's like, wow, they really boss leveled up in one season. What the heck is going to happen the next seasons? You can't really boss level more than Darth Vader because the Emperor really doesn't get involved anymore.
How involved do you think, how much do you think they're going to use Vader in season two? Like, are we going to see Vader as much as we saw the Inquisitor, or is he just going to be a presence here and there for like 15 seconds an episode or something like that?
That's a great question.
Use him too much, I think, because, at least just my personal opinion, because you cannot have him turn into the General Grievous of, you know, Rebels, where every episode they're getting away from Vader again, and at the end it's, oh, shucks, you know.
I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you darn kids.
Exactly. Because we've already seen in the canon comics, and the comics are canon now from Marvel, the Emperor is very disappointed, obviously, that his, you know, Star Destroyer has been thrown up. They blew up the Death Star! I haven't even finished paying that off!
Right.
You know,
what's an aluminum Falcon?
Falcon!
Who's
exactly. Oh, gosh. Anyway, so... But he's very unhappy with Vader and kind of demotes him in some ways, giving him menial work to do, going after little guys. And so I can't imagine at this point, where the rebellion is just kind of starting, if they just keep, you know, defeating Vader every week, it destroys that character and the mystique that was built around him, especially as he enters for the first time in A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think they want to do that, but I think he's going to be... I don't know. I feel like he's going to be the force behind Tarkin at this point. You know, like the ominous threat that, as the Inquisitor said, there are things worse than death.
But okay, here's the thing, and you guys might be able to answer this better than me. I'm sorry, Matt, if I cut you off.
Oh, no.
Here's the thing. Like you referenced just now, he's kind of the force behind Tarkin. Now, in what manner did you mean that? Because I have always been a little confused about the relationship between Vader and Tarkin, and also the level of superiority, because in A New Hope, Tarkin bosses Vader around, but then like we see in Revenge of the Sith that, you know, like Vader is the Emperor's right hand man, and Tarkin's just a military guy, you know, like the Emperor and Vader have that special bond of master and apprentice, and yeah, Tarkin's just like I said, just a general. But then in A New Hope, you have him. He's like, Vader, release him. You know, like, and just yelling at him and telling him what to do. And so how is this going to be portrayed in Rebels? Like, are we going to see Tarkin order Vader around? Are we going to see Vader order Tarkin around? Because we see Vader as a superior force. And also, to wrap all this up, are we going to get James Earl Jones again?
Oh, that... I think the James Earl Jones question is a good one, because I don't mean to be grim with this, but Mr. Jones is, you know, the years are piling up. And
he's advancing in age, yes.
Yes. Time captures all of us. But in terms of the Tarkin Vader dynamic, first and foremost, Vader's entrance into the blockade runner, the way it originally plays is, oh, here's the big bad guy. Whereas Vader is a disappointment to the Emperor, and so he is sent out for sort of remedial training. He's the Emperor's hand, as it were, to keep these military commanders in line. But I would argue that Vader has enough respect for Tarkin, but also there is some vestige of a command structure put in place where if you usurp the command of the you know, the general or the CO who's running the battle, then that takes them down a peg in front of their troops' eyes. So in a sense, Vader and Tarkin are sort of equals at a certain point, but they're like separate branches of government, where when Vader is on Tarkin's installation, Tarkin has to have the appearance of being completely in command. And Vader is just an overseer. He's just sort of like, I'm here to check up from home office, make sure everything's running around here. Listen to that guy.
I can see that. I like that. I like that where, you know, like it's, you know, there's two branch, like leaders of two branches of government where, yeah, like he's on, like Tarkin runs the Death Star and Vader's just there to see the installation. And yeah, I like that. I like that analogy. I like that a lot.
Well, and I think that's kind of what I was going for when I was saying that he's the shadowy presence, because I feel like, you know, not a lot of people in the galaxy know who Darth Vader is. And my guess is that if you know who Vader is, it's a bad thing, you know, and you never want to come anywhere near this man, and this iron lung and mask is just the freakiest, scariest thing. And if he's coming for you, it's over. And so that's my kind of guess almost, is that and kind of from reading some of the new continuity and what they've been doing with Vader, is that he does seem to be very much the one who's going to go in and mop it all up. Like if he comes in, you're getting wiped out, you know. It's not a good thing to have Vader show up. So I think that's maybe where I see them using him in season two. Because again, I would hate for them to see every week we got away from Vader again.
Sure.
You know, so.
Well, I feel like you guys might disagree with me on this one, but I feel like season two or season three of Rebels would be prime real estate to show Leia interacting with Tarkin and or Vader.
I
agree.
Absolutely. The thing is, like, that interaction that they had in A New Hope was very familiar. And like she even said it, like, you know, she's like, you know, Tarkin, I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board. I should have known that you were behind Vader's leash. She, that established that she knew Tarkin. She has interacted with Tarkin. She knew Vader. And she, like, maybe she didn't necessarily interact with Vader, but she's aware of him and aware of what he can do. And that I want to see those first interactions. I want to see those scrapes that they get into, whether it's political or action. You know, I feel like that's something that would be cool to see that wouldn't ruin the character, only enhance it and kind of enhance that moment when they're on the Death Star.
Yeah, sort of see her on her ascendancy in public life. And I mean, you know, to even take it further back, like when she sees Vader for the first time on the blockade runner, she's giving him S. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, oh, please, how are you going to explain this one away this time? You know, she's like actually challenging him. I do completely agree with you. It would be really neat to see those first interactions. But would that speak to one of our sort of identified weaknesses for the show? Does that take away in some way from these characters that they're trying to establish? Or do we feel they'll be established well enough by the time they bring her in that it's no longer a threat to their general story arc?
I don't know if they would bring Leia in before episode 7 drops, because I think they might want to establish where all of those characters end up in episode 7, you know, where they start in that series, so that then they can, they don't step on any toes whatsoever. And I think they already know what's going to happen for the animation team in episode 7, so they can be thinking about those stories as they think of other seasons that they might want to do. But I would expect maybe Leia, that would be my guess, is for her to show up after that. But who knows? I mean, they could just bring her in, you know, at the beginning of season two, especially with where we end up at the end of this season, you know, with being revealed with all sorts of things. So I love the idea, though, of really seeing these rebels find themselves stumble into the larger world, you know, of the rebellion. You know, at the very end, I love that Ezra's like, we're a cell? Did you know we were a cell? And Zeb's like, no, you know, yeah. Like I love that, you know, and so they've kind of really stepped in it at this point. Mm-hmm. They're in a whole, they really are. I'm not going to sing, but they're in a whole new world. and it's a much bigger universe now, and they are in something that's way beyond them. And they are just kind of a small part of that. But how they play into that small part, I think, is going to be really fascinating, especially since they got two Jedi. Or, you know, an old Padawan and a fledgling Padawan himself, you know, Ezra. So I think they've just got so much set up that it's really amazing. Well, we're talking so much, I really want to jump into this because we're already almost at an hour and we need to get to some things that I think will be really important. But I want to talk about these characters. We kept talking about, you know, what happens if they're interacting with all these, you know, bigwigs, the big shots, like Vader and Leia. But what do you guys think about Hera and Kanan, Ezra, Zeb and Sabine and Chopper? Where do they rank? Especially now, we're going to open it up. We're going to talk about everything. So, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the end of the season, we're just going to start dropping some names of people who show up that you're not going to want to know about until you reach the end. So, just we're warning you now. What do you think about these guys when we rank them up against the Tarkins and the Ahsokas and the Leias and all of these people who could show up?
As a whole, they are a fantastic crew. I think they work well together. They're entertaining to watch. They're entertaining to be with and ride along with in their journey and their adventures. One-on-one, I don't think they really stand out that much. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, I really like the show. I love watching the show. But when you have the Sabines and the Heras and the Zebs and everything like that, they're pretty much glorified side characters. And even Ezra, I mean, Ezra has some really great moments, and I really like the relationship that he has with Kanan. But it's the dynamic between Ezra and Kanan that interests me, not Ezra by himself. And not even Kanan by himself. And so I feel like, and also like Zeb, like I really, like I'm really only interested in because of his new relationship with Ezra. And Sabine is just kind of there. And Hera is this really nice force to kind of keep Kanan in line. Even though Kanan's the leader, Hera's, you know, the one, like if he's the king, she's the queen, but as we all know in chess, the queen has more moves. And so I like the dynamic of everyone and their, when they pair off and everything like that. But individually, I think they could be lacking when compared to greater Star Wars characters.
I think you said it best, Tristan. There's nothing I could really add to that. And you know, the only thing I'll say is that I really enjoy Zeb just because I think he's the most fun side character of the bunch. And I will also say that I'm very glad that they've introduced Tarkin, and I hope that he does shape up as their main nemesis, because I really want to see him
rout those rebels.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done, sir. Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah. That's all I got.
No,
Steven Stanton is the master at doing that voice. I got nothing.
Yeah, he's fantastic. But yeah, you know, I think that Tarkin's going to be a much more interesting villain for them than the Inquisitor had the opportunity of being. The Inquisitor was a neat trick. I'm sorry to have seen him go, because I felt like they could have done some really interesting things with him. But Tarkin, that's going to be really neat to watch.
Anybody else super surprised when he died?
Yes.
Yes. I was surprised. But what I love about his death is that you can tell that he's nowhere near a Sith. He's a dark side user. He's a lot like Asajj Ventress in that way.
Yeah.
And yet when he says there are worse things than death, no Sith would say that. Because for them, that is the worst thing, is to die. They want to live forever. That's their goal, is to have power forever. And so the fact that he's freaked out and scared to death, willing to die before he meets Vader and the Emperor, is pretty. It was an awesome scene to see, really distinguishing him from those characters. And I really liked the fact that they were not afraid to do something bold and big, like kill a main bad guy, the Inquisitor.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you brought that up, that like he's a dark side user and not necessarily a Sith, because there is a difference, there is a distinction. And I remember in the first Clone Wars series, the miniseries, or micro series, excuse me, where Asajj Ventress is auditioning to Dooku, and she beats everybody, and she just goes, "I am Sith," and that's the end of the episode. And then the next one starts up, and it's just Dooku going, "Ha ha ha! A bold claim."
Yeah, exactly. It's very much in that, and I just think it was great. You know, for me, like these characters, these six. I think, like you guys, that they work so well together. They have created that chemistry between the characters, which is fantastic. For me, the standout character from the beginning was actually Hera. I really like her character, and it's because she, I think, and knowing from listening to Dave, she is the leader. She's the one who knows everything. She's the one who's getting all the orders from Fulcrum. She's the one who knows about the other cells. Kanan doesn't know any of this stuff. And if you read the New Dawn book, you know that it's Hera who inspires Kanan to basically pick up the mantle of the Jedi again when he had lost it, when he had been on the run for so long. So her character, I think, has just been fantastic, because I think it shows that a strong, confident woman in a show doesn't have to be the one who's always out there kicking the butt. She's the one, she's the glue who holds all of them together. And I think it's a great representation for girls watching the show to see strength in in a woman through Hera and the way that she acts. And I really, really, really like her character. I think she's one that I really can't wait to see get more of her background, because she's actually related, if you didn't know, to Cham Syndulla from the Clone Wars. And if you remember the episodes with Mace Windu where they were liberating Ryloth, that is her father.
I did not know that.
Yes. Yeah, so she is related to, she's related to a freedom fighter already, which it's nice to see them referencing those things in the Clone Wars. So you can see where she got her fire and her spirit from. You know, I think Kanan's great. I really enjoy his character. I think Freddie Prinze Jr. is doing an awesome job just really nailing the performances in him, especially the last few episodes of the season. He gives some really nuanced performances, I think. Even just Path of the Jedi, where he's talking to Yoda and everything. And I love that. I enjoy his interaction with Ezra. I think that's fantastic. I think Zeb mostly has been comic relief, but I liked that they give some backstory to him, too, the Lasats, which is funny because I have the Ralph McQuarrie action figures on my wall over here, and he looks pretty much just like the Chewie.
Yeah, the original concept Chewie, yes, the group. Yeah.
And like you guys, it's Sabine who I feel like they just have kind of not done enough with, and I feel like in season two we'll probably get more of her, but I hope we do, because all of these characters, I think, have great potential, a lot like Voyager. I just need them to live out their potential, to put it in a Star Trek reference for everyone. And Chopper, I hated Chopper at the beginning. I really did. He was such a jerk to everyone. And then by the end, when he is like he's crying droid tears, basically, because Kanan's gone, I was like, wow, Chopper really cares. That's awesome. You know, like, he's not just a mean bucket of bolts. He actually has, you know, that the kind of R2 affection for the people around him. He just doesn't like to show it. And as Dave says, he's the cat of, if R2's the dog, he's the cat.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that. That's funny.
Yeah. So I think these characters are good. Now, whether they hold up will really kind of depend on where we go in the rest of the seasons. And they drop a huge bomb on us by the end of the season. And if you'd kept up with the rumors, I kind of knew what was happening. I knew this was going to come. And a lot of people had thought, who is Fulcrum? And if you had been paying attention in the episode Out of Darkness, there's actually a small reference to Ahsoka on the side of the box when they go to pick up the supplies from Fulcrum. There is the symbol of her from her forehead. So I thought this could be Ahsoka, and I'm not going to lie, I watched it again tonight before we started recording the finale. I got so giddy Like, I'm like a giddy schoolboy when Ahsoka comes on screen. Like, it's Ahsoka. It's so awesome.
Yeah, I'll. I have to say that. I knew it was coming, but the main reason why I knew it was coming is because someone who will remain nameless put the hashtag Ahsoka Lives in their tweet.
What?
And
who is that?
Yeah, I know.
I feel like. What a jerk.
I know. What a jerk. I mean, I just feel like, who would do that? You know, like the day after, you know, this huge thing was revealed.
Not rushing. I'm sorry, Tristan.
It's quite all right. No, when Fulcrum was introduced, like the idea of Fulcrum was introduced, I kind of felt like, I was like, okay, it's going to be either an original series character. It's gonna be like Bail Organa, or it's gonna be Ahsoka. Like I thought it was gonna be like one of those two, and I felt like it would be way cooler if it was Ahsoka. So it was like I think they definitely went in the right direction with using her in that fashion. Also, I cannot wait to figure out who Sarah Michelle Gellar is gonna play in season two.
Oh, yeah,
that
no
is
kidding.
Gonna be really. That's gonna be pretty wild.
I wondered if she was going to play Leia at all, actually. When you were, I've heard some rumors that maybe she might play Leia.
Hmm.
Of course, she could also play Mon Mothma. You know, so there's lots of people that are out there, strong female, amazing characters that I would love to see. You know, Mon Mothma was in the Clone Wars and an active role in there quite a bit with Padme. So I'd love to see her as the older character kind of. Working with Bail and really help forging this rebellion.
I want to see her as a female Inquisitor and have her face off against Freddie Prinze Jr. Awesome. In the most backwards reference laden cartoon showdown in history.
Well, it wouldn't work timeline wise completely, but what if she was like Mara Jade?
Oh,
they
wow.
Got rid of that.
EU. Yeah, like, no, but they,
no, I'm just saying, but what if they used her?
Yeah,
what if they used
if
that
they brought
character
her in.
Decided that the Emperor's Hand.
Yeah, they rewind it a little bit. They take the concept of Mara Jade and instead of making her a contemporary of Luke Skywalker, put her in this time period. That would be interesting.
Yeah. I'm just saying, there's so much you can do. I'm just exploding with ideas. I mean, because if you think about what was left from the Clone Wars, you had Darth Maul is still around. The comic series that's canon, they didn't finalize his story. You know, he's not dead. He's still out there. You do have Asajj Ventress. She's still around as far as we know. You know, so there's a lot of characters out there. Did Rex survive the Clone Wars? And is he still alive at all? He'd be really old at this point. But is he still around? I mean, there's so many things you could follow up on. And then, like I said, you know, you've got Mon Mothma, you've got Admiral Ackbar, you've got all these other characters from the Rebellion that would be so fantastic to get to see as they kind of open up this world for them. And so I think season two and season three, you know, and hopefully they'll give them at least 4 or 5 seasons like the Clone Wars. You've got so much that could happen. In fact, maybe you just do 5 seasons and that's, you know, the last season is right before the opening of A New Hope. You know, you just have, you kind of represent a year in the life of the Rebellion.
Well,
so.
the Rebel Alliance is supposed to have won their first major victory right before A New Hope. So maybe the end of the series could be that victory.
Yeah,
exactly. I would absolutely love that. I think that continuity would be really great where like one season is 1 year right before, because it's 5 years before A New Hope, right? Or how many years is it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
this is the... It's 20 years between Revenge of the Sith and Star Wars A New Hope, and they're 15 years, because Ezra's 15. So yeah, there's about 5 years before A New Hope now. And so yeah, again, you got Leia you can play with too, obviously, as she's going to become a senator in a few years. So, I mean, there's so much to work with, I think. Goodness, this show has so much going for it. So I guess if you haven't guessed, I came around on the show. Well, one thing that I wanted to touch on before we get to the end and before we kind of give our final thoughts and ratings for what we thought the season did, music, you touched on that a little bit, John. By the end of the series, how did you feel about the music with Kevin Kiner's work? I mean, obviously, compared to Clone Wars, Clone Wars is very different. George did that on purpose. He wanted it to feel like its own thing, mm-hmm. and it does. There are obviously cues in there where you get the references to the other trilogy, you know, whether it's the prequel trilogy or the original trilogy. They use both in the Clone Wars. What did you guys think of the music?
I honestly, you know, like with what John said earlier in the podcast, it's it's so similar. Like, they use so many cues from A New Hope and from the Star Wars franchise that I couldn't really tell you how much I noticed. Like, because I didn't really notice that much about the music. Like, I was just like, oh yeah, it sounds a lot like John Williams. It feels like John Williams' score, and because they use so much of it, and so yeah, like Kiner's score in Clone Wars was so individual and so unique that you noticed it, and this one just kind of blends with the rest, and so I don't really have too many opinions about it.
I still want to hear some more unique individual themes. I know that Kiner can do it. I know that he's capable of it. I don't know if there's some sort of as crazy as this sounds, I don't know whether it was a stylistic or a budget decision to say, well, we own the copyright on this and just turn it into some synth music. Like, I don't know, but I sincerely want them to develop a unique theme for the characters throughout there. Because for me, that's one of the most important stumbling blocks, because music is so important to Star Wars, to getting that feel. And the idea that this is borrowing from something that has already established its own feel, it feels like a little bit of a cheat to me. Now, you know, borrowing certain motifs and stuff like that, that's fine. But I really want to hear them develop the music more.
Yeah, I am somewhere in between you guys. Like, Tristan, I kind of got to the point where it just became what I heard on the show, and I'm used to it. At the same time, I'm a little bit with you, John, where I would kind of love to hear what Ezra's theme sounds like, or right. Hera, or Kanan, you know, that they would have their own themes the way that John would create new themes for new characters. You know, Grievous has his theme and things like that. So I'd really like to see some of that stuff come in. But on a whole, you know, Kevin does a great job. And if you're going to have somebody riff John Williams, I think he does it well. And I can't fault him for wanting to use this music, but I would love to see some just kind of original things, because I'd love to have a beautiful, you know, Hera and Kanan theme, because I kind of think of them as being space married. They don't really reference them having a relationship, but it kind of seems like they do. And it's cute. I love it. I love those two together. I love when she calls him dear or love or something like that. It's real sweet. Yeah. I'd love Ezra to have a theme that kind of felt familiar with the Force type theme, but tweaked so it just didn't feel like we're referencing Luke Skywalker. Although I realized Ezra really is the proto Luke Skywalker. And this is the final main question I want to ask you guys. Yoda goes into hiding, and so does Obi-Wan Kenobi. And those are the last two official Jedi, you know, fully trained Jedi masters, obviously Jedi Grandmaster with Yoda. And no other, at least as far as we know, you know, obviously Ahsoka, she's not a trained Jedi. In fact, she's not a Jedi at all anymore. Her lightsabers are white. And Dave said in an interview that is because she's no longer Jedi or Sith. She is her own thing. You know, she's just a Force user. So I felt like I was thinking about this today, is that Ezra is really a proto Luke. He's the new form of where the Jedi Order would go as they do things completely differently, because obviously he's 15 years old, so he's close to where Luke's going to be when Luke starts his training. He hasn't had any exposure to, being raised in a Force environment like the original Jedi were in the Old Republic. Everything about him feels very much a lot like Luke in those ways, you know. So I just thought it was a really interesting idea of that, you know, obviously Yoda is involved a little bit in him at least getting his lightsaber crystal and stuff. So he's kind of blessing him being trained in the same way he will Luke one day. And it's interesting because he says about Luke, too old. Yes, too old. You know, but he doesn't say that about Ezra. And so it's just a really interesting thing how all this is going to play out. And what do you guys kind of think about that idea, though? That Ezra is a little bit like a proto-Luke.
Well, I feel like it's interesting because I feel like Ezra is, like, because he doesn't have the background of the temple, it's very much like Luke. But I think his relationship with Kanan isn't like a relationship with Obi-Wan. I feel like it's more like a relationship with Han. And I think that's a good thing because we don't need another Obi-Wan and Anakin. We don't need another Obi-Wan and Luke. We don't need another Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. We need something a little bit different. And so we have a Luke Skywalker with a Force-using hand. And I think that's the rough and tumble sensibility that we need in a ship like the Ghost.
Yeah, part of my trouble plugging into the show is that I felt that his arc could imperil the sense of importance to Luke's arc. But I think that the way that they're progressing with it is, yeah, he's going to be trained, but I don't think that he's going to be... He's not being trained in the same way that the Jedi were. Luke is trained as a Jedi, whereas Yoda's aware... And I think Yoda has hit a level and blesses this, you know, to borrow your term, Matt, in the sense of, you know, you're not going to be a Jedi, but you can use the Force, so it's better that you're watched over. Like, Yoda has hit a plateau where he realizes no matter what happens from this point forward, the Jedi Order as I knew it, and as it existed before, doesn't exist and never will again. It's never going to be that way again, at least for another 1,000 years until, you know, rules, you know, make it crusty and stale and the Sith rise again. But, like, I think that what they're doing with Ezra's arc, they're being careful with it, and I think that's wise.
I'm with you on that one because I also thought that too. I was just like, Luke is special. He's the only one. He's the hope that we have. And why, like, if Ezra, you know, like if Ezra is just like another Luke, I mean, like, why do we need Luke then? And because this happened before. But I think you're right because, like, even at the end of Clone Wars, Yoda says, he's like, yeah, we're not going to win the Clone Wars. And that's okay because we're going to set it up so that we're going to lose this war, but we're going to win for peace later on because there's someone named Skywalker that is going to help us out. There's going to be another Skywalker that's going to help us out. And so I feel like with Ezra, with Kanan, with Yoda talking with them, I feel like he's finding the Force users where he can using the Force and just basically planting seeds. Like, whenever we can get a good Force user on our side, let's do that. But they're going to help out the Rebel Alliance using their skill. But Luke, like you said, John, is going to be a Jedi. Being a Jedi is much more than throwing things with your mind.
Right.
And deflecting laser bolts. And I feel like Ezra will find that peace and that serenity because you need that in order to use the Force. But Luke will be the Jedi, like he's going to be Yoda's and Obi-Wan's replacement. Ezra is going to help them out because he'll learn how to fight.
Yeah.
Well, and it'll be interesting because, you know, what I thought was most interesting too is because I felt like Yoda was really embracing what he had said at the end of Sith, which was, you know, failed I have and exile must go. Like, he's realizing that his failure as the Jedi Master over the Jedi Council for 900 years, that he's missed something and things do need to change. The Jedi Order needs to change. So it will never be the same as it was in the Old Republic, but that's a good thing. And so starting with Ezra and seeing that develop is very interesting. Yeah, who knows? I mean, there's so much to go with this. And I think just like, the Clone Wars and then bringing in Ahsoka and everybody was like, what? You know, Anakin has a Padawan and then we all love her by the end. You know, I have the same feeling that by the end of when we get to the end of Rebels, we're all going to be in love with the characters just as much. Because they just have a way of doing that. I think Dave has a way of just getting to us with the characters, and he understands how George created characters and used them so that by the end, yes, when Ahsoka shows up at the end of Rebels season one, we're all just like fan flailing, you know, just our hearts are a beating, a pattering because we're so excited to have our character back. And I think that'll end up happening one day when Rebels has their final episode and where we maybe wonder about what happens next for the characters. You know, where do they go next? So there's a lot, and we could talk for hours more because it's Star Wars. But final thoughts and just kind of ratings for the first season. What do you think, John?
Pulls it together by the end. Makes me want to watch season two. So I will give it... 2.5 crystals out of 4.
Oh, that's a good rating then. Yeah. What about you, Tristan?
I think I definitely enjoyed it a little bit sooner than John. I think it pulled me in about a fourth of the way in, and so I think this is an incredibly strong season. It has its ups and downs. You know, it's definitely not a perfect season. It's not as it doesn't knock it out of the park until the very end, but it is good much earlier. So I give it 7 force pushes out of 10.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
You know, for me, by the time that we got to, I think, we got Path of the Jedi, and the way that they used Yoda, it totally won me over. And then when we got into Vision of Hope, Call to Action, Rebel Resolve, and Fire Across the Galaxy. We didn't even mention that Brent Spiner is a voice in this show, Mr. Data himself, which was fantastic. I think it just nails it. And on a whole, I would probably take, if I could, maybe 3 episodes out of this season. I could lose them, and I wouldn't feel like it, you know, it mattered too much. And because of that, because I was completely won over, and because Ahsoka came back, geez, for me, this is 4 out of 5 Ahsoka appearances for me. I think that this series really pulled me in by the end and had me loving it. And I didn't know if that was possible, but at the beginning, but apparently, I just need patience as a good Jedi. So. Well, guys, it has been awesome to have you both here talking Star Wars Rebels today, but it is not the only thing that we have been talking about here on Trek FM the past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And celebrate his life and celebrate his work and his talent and his integrity. And if you get a tear in the eye, that's okay. That's he would approve. Spock would approve. And you know, he'd say, "You humans, why do you feel you need to do this?" But he would approve.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to like walk around the corner and be like, "Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5.
The shuttlecraft.
The orb.
Usually, you want to be able to capture it or isolate one, but you can't do that either because it just keeps, you know, so it really does seem like a conundrum of, okay, how do we take this down?
You know, this minefield, they are the tribbles of war.
To the journey! One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now! The ready room.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
He tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the just, momentum makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. and that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, actually, it started out life as a comic book pitch. I originally came up with it to pitch to Wildstorm back when they had the comics license. The idea was it would be a one-year series that would run throughout the 12 calendar months of 2001, which was the 35th anniversary of Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
Sometimes that just works better because you can create and craft a story that's very compelling because you're not having to worry about what's happened other places. Okay, we have to make sure this is going to connect to this, and my guess is somehow Agent Carter is going to have something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on, and maybe something that happens in Age of Ultron.
Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. Apple users were there. We're actually a featured provider there on iTunes, so you can find all of our shows. Hit that subscribe button, helps us out greatly, makes it easier for the listeners to find us when they search for the show. If you're not an Apple user, got you covered as well. Find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file and grab the RSS link as well. Guys, that was so much fun getting to talk about Rebels with you. I loved having you on.
Yeah, Matt, thank you so much for inviting me. It was so great to talk with you and talk with John about Star Wars Rebels. I can't wait for season 2, and we cannot wait another 2 years to podcast together.
Oh, goodness, Tristan. Agreed. No, we can't. You've got to be back on the show before then. Both of you, in fact. That would be great. John, where can we find you online?
Well, you can find me trolling around the Twitterverse at Kessel Junkie. And I'm appearing on the Trek FM network on Commentary Trek Stars with Mike and Max. And you can also find me on a little old podcast called Words with Nerds every Thursday.
Awesome. And Tristan, where can we find you?
Well, I'm also on Twitter. You can find me at The Insane Robin, and you can also find me here on the Trek.fm network on a Voyager podcast, To the Journey, with my podcasting partner, Charlyn Schmidt.
To the Journey!
To the Journey! And you can also find me on my independent podcast, The Nerd Party, with Matt Hansen, where it's very much like this show, where we don't talk about Star Trek, we talk about anything geek, but we started out as a podcast where we're going to talk about technology, we're going to talk about comic books, we're going to talk about TV. It really has just turned into a geek movie podcast. So I really hope that you guys check it out. It's thenerdparty.com. And you'll be able to find us anywhere major podcasts are sold.
Great, guys. Thanks for being on. Another way that you can help keep all of our shows coming to each week is become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find all the current goals and milestone contribution levels, along with the great perks that we have for you. These include seats in the content development team, exclusive content, producer credits, and so much more. Guys, we appreciate your support. We are a listener-supported network, and without you, we just can't do this. So we appreciate all the support, and you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. I want to say a special thank you to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau, and his support of the network and the 602 Club. His Twitter account is at Norman Lau, and he's a big supporter of the Star Trek Axanar project, and you can also find him on their official Facebook page, as well as the Babel Conference. And last but not least, he's a huge supporter of our network through Patreon and the host of Warp 5 now. We'd also like to thank Kenneth Tripp for his support of the network and being an associate producer on the 602 Club. Thank you so much, guys. If you'd like to contact us, you can do that at trek.fm/contact. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We are on Twitter at trekfm, Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course, we're on the Babel Conference. That's the best place to have any Star Trek discussion these days. Just search the Babel Conference in the search field there on Facebook, or you can go to the website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. I'd also like to say a quick thanks for an iTunes review that we got from Emily Reeds. Emily, thank you so much for giving us that great 5-star review. It means so much to me that you would spend the time to go on to iTunes and give us the review. I know that it takes time out of your day. And guys, it really does help make us rise in the rankings there on iTunes. So I appreciate that. It helps the visibility of the show and Trek FM. So thank you for everyone who does that. And if you have a chance, I'd love for you to do that. And I'll definitely give you that shout out on the show as thanks. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about books and comics of Star Trek. Also, I'm on The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine exclusively, and my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now to hear...